I'd like to begin with health care reform. You met this morning with Hillary Clinton to discuss health care reform. Since the task force report is to be released just a few weeks away, is there still time for Republicans to influence it?
I think so. Not as much as we would have liked. In fact, when I asked the question, Mrs. Clinton, this morning, I tried to be totally respectful, but suggested that, you know, we really hadn't been consulted. We've been told we've been briefed, but not consulted. There is a difference between briefing and consultation and getting in on the details. But she indicated that they were prepared to do that. I know next Wednesday, I think, or Thursday, the 6th of May, we have a working lunch at the White House with some of the Republican leadership and the president on health care. Now, whether they've already made all these decisions and we're just being asked to get on board, I don't know, but I don't think so. I'm convinced that she's sincere this morning when she told us a lot of decisions hadn't been made because they want to find out from members of Congress in both parties. You know, what do they think about all the hot buttons? How do you pay for it? Will there be new taxes? And what about your doctors? And what about the paperwork and all the other things that go into it? Who's going to, are going to have any insurance companies left when it's over? And that wasn't clear when I left. But so there are a lot of those decisions that I think we may have some input in. And we may not agree, but I'm willing to predict that nobody has the votes right now for health care. Democrats don't have the votes. They have a majority. They don't have the votes for health care. We don't have the votes for health care. And one of our members said, I think correctly, to Mrs. Clinton, don't try to pick off two or three Republicans. That won't work. This ought to be a total bipartisan, or she said, nonpartisan effort. Now, maybe it can't be that way, but at least we ought to try. The American people want us to try.
What are Republicans most concerned about that the task force is considering?
I think most concerned about, like everybody else, how much is it going to cost, and will you be able to choose your doctor, and will you have the same quality, and who's going to make the decision? You're going to have wage and price controls, or some talk this morning about voluntary price controls. I'm not certain how they work. But I'd like to see the fine print. And what happens? I mean, my view is that obviously any administration, once they decide, are going to give you all the good points of their plan. And whether Republican or Democratic administration, people who don't like it are going to have to dig out the bad points of the plan. And as Mrs. Clinton knows, and as we all know, when you're talking about comprehensive health care, you're going to make a lot of people unhappy. A lot of people. Consumers, providers, a lot of people. And they're going to have a right to be heard. You know, the Constitution says you have a right to be heard. You have a right to petition Congress. And it may be their livelihood at stake. It may be giving up benefits if you're a consumer, and you don't want to give up benefits. So I guess that's about where we are.
Was this morning's session the beginning of the type of cooperation that you want to see with the White House?
I don't think it makes much difference what Bob Dole wants to see, except that I am have some responsibility to my Republican colleagues. I think it's what the American people, what the taxpayer, what the wage earner, whatever, what the person wants to see out there in America. They want to see us working together. That doesn't mean if we reach some fundamental impasse, we don't square off. But at least at the outset, I think this is a step in the right direction. Now, you know, we still want the details. I can't remember who used to say, if you don't want me there, if I'm not there for the takeoff, don't invite me in for the crash landing. And that's sort of where we are.
How would you finance health care reform?
Well, she didn't ask me that question, but I'll tell you one thing I'd do, which makes some people unhappy, maybe some people here. Let's just take Part B Medicare. There's a $40 billion annual subsidy for Part B Medicare. We pay 75% of everybody's Part B premiums, whether you're worth $10 million, $1 million, or $10. There's something wrong with that system. I mean, if people who have money can't afford to pay more of their Part B premium, and we don't want to change that, and we haven't got much will to make a change, we ought to be able to at least cut that in half, save $20 billion right there. Now, that's a start. Plus, I think you've got to look at all the savings. That's what Mrs. Clinton has told us. They hope to save a lot of money. by reducing, instead of 19 forms that a nurse fills out a day, or 9 or 11 forms, whatever it is, and 19 the doctor fills out, get it down to 1 or 0. Former Secretary Sullivan used to talk about that all the time. Plus, we can do a lot of small business reforms right now that everybody agrees on that will lower the cost of insurance and provide more coverage and give small business people more opportunities. Let them pool together, let them get the economies of scale, and all the other things that come with that. But I'm willing to say right now, let's take a look at Part B Medicare. It's not popular, but I think it's something that we ought to be able to do. And we'll pay for all of it. But.
Are there any aspects of health care reform where Democrats and Republicans are in agreement?
Well, I think a whole host of areas. All these small business reforms, and there are a whole host of those. And I think quality care, choice, we want to preserve choice of physicians. We could pass a bill tomorrow on the things we agree on, but that wouldn't be the major change that some people think we ought to need. And I want to make one other point. Don't get the impression that somehow our health care delivery system is in bad shape. We have the best health care delivery system in the world. So don't shoot down the doctors and the hospital administrators and the pharmaceutical companies and everybody else and say, oh, we got a terrible system. We don't do as well as infant mortality as some other countries. I think we rank about 14th. We don't do as well as longevity for men and women. We rank about 6th or 7th. But we have a little different lifestyle some have in this country, which leads to a lot of infant deaths and other things, and you don't live as long because of what we eat. We're getting better at it. So there are a lot of areas that we agree on. But I don't think we're going to stop there. We can't stop there. But don't throw out the whole thing. We've got a pretty good system. A lot of Canadians come here for their operations. And people come from all over the world to train in America, in our medical schools, and train with our doctors. So we are the envy of the world. We just got a problem. How do we bring in 30 to 37 million people who can get medical treatment now, but they're not covered by insurance? How do you bring them in? How do you pay for it? That's the big question.
Are you in favor of giving a line item veto to the president?
Yes. I was when we had a Republican president, and I'm still in favor of the line item veto. But the thing that passed in the House is sort of symbolic. It doesn't really mean anything. I want a real line item veto, and it can apply to tax expenditures as well. I think Senator Bradley wanted to expand it to tax expenditures. That's fine with me, but I wouldn't bet the farm on it getting through the Senate.
In the debate over the stimulus bill, many Republicans said over and over again that this was a tax and spend proposal that was bad. Can you highlight some specific items in the Republican alternative?
Well, there wasn't any alternative to that program. You just had a bad program. And we didn't think the alternative ought to be one not quite so bad. But we offered a substitute that paid for it. We paid, except for the $4 billion for unemployment, we offered, $350 million, so much for immunization, $3.5 billion, I guess it was. But we paid for it. We paid for it with administrative cuts across the board. That was a big difference in the program. First place, you ought to cut it. And the second place, the American people say you ought to pay for it. So we cut it from $16 billion down to about $3.5 billion. And we paid for it. We thought that was a fairly substantial difference. And we had hoped they might have accepted it. We were told by the experts, if we put $1 billion in for highways, they could spend about $718 million immediately for maintenance. That creates jobs. And as I said before, if they need money for summer jobs, they need money for immunization. Immunization doesn't create any jobs, and a lot of people think the program is oversold because anybody in America, in the view of many physicians, any child, can get immunization now. But the doctor can't go out and run everybody down in every county in America if parents won't bring their children to the doctor. So we had a good plan. We paid for it.
Are you at all concerned that the defeat of the jobs bill will slow the economy now that the first quarter GDP growth is down to 1.8%?
Well, if anybody believes that a $16 billion spending bill wasn't paid for, in a $6 trillion economy will stimulate the economy, then I've missed something. I mean, it's like a flea on a dog. I mean, it's not The dog aren't going to worry much about it. And the economy wasn't going to worry much about it. In fact, I think you could say the opposite was true. The very time we ought to be cutting spending to demonstrate we're willing to do that, we're spending money and not even paying for it, adding it to the deficit. I think it sent the wrong signal. We were trying to send the right signal, cut it and pay for it and pass it. We couldn't get it done, but there may still be some things that will be done the next few weeks.
You mentioned Ross Perot. How often have you talked to him recently? Have you discussed strategy on these issues?
I talked to him Monday. This is Friday. So it's this week. And I told him I thought he'd done a good job on NBC. And he said he thought we'd done a good job on the stimulus package. And I think we both decided to quit while we were ahead.
Do you favor the proposal to boost the taxable amount on Social Security to 85% from 50%?
Let me go back to 85 a minute. When we froze Social Security quotas, the Republicans in the Senate, some of you remember that, we won that vote on our budget by 50 to 49. We didn't add any taxes. Only one Democrat voted with us. We froze quotas for 6 months to reduce the deficit. They're taking this Social Security money away for more spending. They're going to take 30-some billion away from senior citizens, not to reduce the deficit. So you can say, well, at least you've made some contribution to your grandchildren. They want to spend it for some new social program, and we're opposed to it.
What is so bad about tax and spend compared to the borrow and spend record of Republican administrations?
Well, I didn't know that was the Republican record. The last time I checked, the President of the United States could not spend any money the Congress didn't appropriate. And the Democrats have had the House for 40 years, and they had the Senate all but 6 years in the first, in the Reagan years. We controlled the Senate in the first six of the eight Reagan years. But, and again, I must confess, I'm not a supply-sider. Some are. Some of my colleagues think we just cut taxes, the economy will grow. I think they're right. We've got to grow the economy. We've got to create jobs in the private sector. But I think we also have to look at the spending side. And again, you go back to every poll that's being taken, the American people are now concerned more about spending than they are about cutting taxes.
How is Al Gore doing in his new role in the Senate?
Well, I think he's doing a great job. You know, Al Gore is a friend of mine, and still is. And we sort of passed each other this morning being on talk shows, and he was saying one thing and I was saying something probably different. But I think he's doing a good job. I think he loves his job, and he and President Clinton are obviously well suited. They like each other, they know each other, they think alike. That's worrisome, but you know.
You mentioned a new crime initiative. Will that include anything to deal with gun controls?
We had a modified version of the Brady bill in the last crime bill. It was the Mitchell-Dole proposal, which was a 5-day waiting period, but it also provided that within 1 year you'd have instant checks, where you'd walk in to buy a gun, you pull out your little card, like you do a credit card, and if it says tilt, you don't get anything. You don't get a gun. And that's an instant check. There's no waiting period necessary. I think that would still pass the Senate.
If 26 Republicans signed the NAFTA support letter, does this mean that 17 may be against it?
No, it means we couldn't find the other 17. They weren't hiding. I mean, I didn't. Senator Danforth was the initiator of this, and I think the support is even broader than that. But that's 26. That's, you know, you only need 25 Democrats to have 51. So if they can furnish 25, we'll be happy to furnish 26 and probably more. We think trade's important. We think Mexico's one of our fastest-growing markets. 100 million people there looking for opportunities. Plus, if we create jobs in Mexico, It may stop some of the immigration that people are so concerned about to America. So we think initially, yes, a little job loss, but more markets, more opportunities for American products. And I have some reservation about it. People in my state have some reservations, my wheat farmers and others. I think overall we've got to trade. We can't build a wall around America. We can't be protectionist. And Republicans tend to believe in fair trade, and we think this offers that opportunity.
To deal with the trade deficit with Japan, President Clinton is suggesting sector-specific targets. For example, he has suggested a results-oriented approach in areas such as autos and auto parts. Do you agree with this approach?
I think I do, but I'm not certain what it means. So, my view is, and I've said it publicly, I think Mr. Cantor is doing a good job as our U.S. trade representative. I think he has sent some very strong signals. I think the Japanese must understand that, you know, there's a certain limit on how much deficit we're going to have every year with Japan. And there are some who would like to get into this so-called mirror legislation. We do to you what you do to us. If we can't get into your markets, you can't get into our markets. Now, that's pretty severe. It was never meant to be every country. You have to have an absolute balance with every country. So my view is, I hope the Japanese, and we were fairly tough in the Bush administration, I must say. Carla Hills did an outstanding job. She spent more time on the Japan trade issue than any other area. She made a lot of progress, and I hope this administration can build on it.
If our NATO allies in Europe refuse to get involved militarily in Bosnia, what should the United States do?
Well, we shouldn't go it alone. It's going to be hard enough to generate support of the American people if we have a united front. And again, I go back to the Gulf crisis where President Bush rallied all the countries, 26 countries. It's an amazing thing that President Bush did. We forget some of the good things that happen after an election. And I'm not certain that President Clinton, that's probably not even doable here. But I think we have to have support from the NATO countries, and I would hope that they would understand that our national interest. Now, I might say, what is the national interest? Is there a national interest? Why should American pilots be endangered? Even though these terrible things you see every night on television make you want to do about anything, but is that enough reason to risk American lives? Well, my view is, if we don't draw a line somewhere, the next target of the Serbian regime, not the Serbian people. I think most of the Serbian people want peace. 35% voted for Milan Panic in an election I think was rigged. So the Serbian people want peace. The next target is going to be Kosovo, where you have 2 million Albanians. And you get down that part of the world, you've got Turkey and Greece and Albania and Bulgaria and Macedonia. You've got the possibilities of a real conflict that would involve us sooner or later.
Are you planning to run for president in 1996?
I haven't made any plans, not even for 1994 or 1995. I think, certainly you keep your options open. Maybe by 96 I'll be ready for the Metamucil generation.
Yesterday, your Republican colleagues described public financing of election campaigns as making politicians welfare kings. Can we assume that if you run in 1996, you won't be applying for public money?
Well, I'd be willing to repeal. I received public money when I ran in 88 and 76 when I was President Ford's running mate. But I must say, after having the real experience with the Federal Elections Commission, I know they're all good people over there. They're still working on my audit from 1988. And they're working on all the other candidates in 1988. If we have public financing of all campaigns, the FEC is going to be bigger than the Pentagon. And because they never get finished. They never finish. Now, at least they ought to, 4 years ought to be enough to finish. And I didn't get that much money. And it makes you understand what a lot of American businessmen and businesswomen and farmers go through dealing with the federal government. It gives you more appreciation for the real problems they have. But let's face it, I don't think they finished any of the other audits either. Now, maybe that's not their fault. Maybe they're short of personnel. But I'd be happy to repeal that whole provision.
What is your position on gays in the military, and how do you think that will be resolved, that issue will be resolved this year?
Well, I know if you say you're opposed to it, somebody's going to say, oh, there's another one of those gay bashers. But I don't think serving in the military is a right. It's a privilege to serve in the military. And you can be rejected for a lot of reasons. You can be overweight. You can be overage. I couldn't get in the Air Force because I was colorblind. You know, that wouldn't have been much good on camouflage and things of that kind. I saw numbers when there weren't any numbers in those charts. So, and I might have hit the right target, you know, but who knows. But, so I ended up in the infantry. But my view is that, you know, we had a pretty good policy. Why change it? And I know that's controversial. And I know there are a lot of people in town 2 weeks ago who had a different view. But I hope we don't change the present, the policy we had before President Clinton's slight change earlier this year.
Before I ask the final question, I'd like to present you with a certificate of appreciation from the National Press Club.
Thank you.
And a National Press Club mug. He's looking forward to this.
Thank you.
The final question, in light of your host audience today, do you have any reaction to the Clinton administration's adoption of the Bush campaign slogan, annoy the media? In other words, how do you assess the media's treatment of President Clinton?
You mean since the election?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah. 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 I think it's been much more objective, and I must say, I think we've been doing a lot of soul searching. How do we get our message out? We're the minority. We're not protected by the Endangered Species Act or anything else in this town, and so we had a group of very, we thought, good communicators up to visit with us, and one of them told us, you know, they're not going to listen to you for 60, 90, 120 days. And I think they're right. And I'll finish just where I started. You know, when you have a new president, whether he or she be a Democrat or Republican, the American people are fair-minded people. They want that person to succeed. And so President Clinton comes into town, and he had a lot of people out there who didn't vote for him. In fact, almost every American saying, go to it, reduce the deficit. But now getting back to the question, I think the media, like they do to any other president, being very objective, except in some cases. I haven't gotten used to those editorials in the New York Times, but I'm working on it. So you're looking for areas where he said one thing in the campaign and did something else, just as you did with President Bush, just as you did with President Reagan. So I'd give the media, since we're grading everybody else, I'd give the media about a B-minus. In covering Clinton so far, since the election.
Thank you, Professor.